Well, Nick, I was in the studio feeling a little hungry after a few hours of recording, and I really wanted some McDonald's, so I wrote a song called McChicken.
You're listening to Buff Speak, the official podcast of the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University. I am Dr. Nick Gerlich, your host, as we meet up with the thought leaders making an impact today.
Before the social media era, the influencers among us were TV and movie stars, musicians or sports stars. Marketers hired them to appear in ads as spokespersons, the implicit hope being that because some larger-than-life person said a product was good, well, then, of course, everyone would buy it. Things are very different today, and it's possible for anyone who has the right street cred and content to attract massive numbers of followers. Marketers have taken note, offering lucrative cash and merchandise contracts to social media standouts. After all, these everyday Joes are often viewed as being more believable than those paid pundits on television. My guest today is Trey Omrin, or as he is better known online as Trey from Next Door, a fitting stage name given the realities of the new economy. Trey is a creator from Deland, Florida, and has become one of the most successful personalities on TikTok Lives. As of this recording, he has 432,000 followers, more than enough to establish him as a mover and shaker in the genre. Trey, welcome to the show, and hey, thanks for being part of my first out-of-the-studio recording. And just so you know, I am in Trey's kitchen here in Deland, Florida. It might be chilly here, but it's a lot warmer than it is back in Texas right now. Yeah. But sorry for rubbing it in y'all's face. Thanks for having me here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. This is a really cool opportunity, man. Thank you for making some time for me.
You're a local boy through and through. I mean, I found some interesting video clips of you from your football days at Deland High. I mean, I saw some great receptions and all this stuff that's from, you know, it's from the Wayback Machine here that's pulling this stuff up. I also found a slew of music videos on YouTube. Tell us your story. I mean, first of all, you got to tell us how old you are. And personally, I want this to kind of sink in with our listeners that you've achieved a lot more success at this ripe young age than most folks will ever have throughout their entire life.
Well, Nick, I really appreciate it, man. It's a blessing to be in this position and be here. I'm 23 years old, born and raised here in Deland, Florida. I went to Deland High School and graduated from there and went to Stetson University, pursued college, and hit the ground running with social media and making music right after that.
Wow. So very cool that you went to Stetson. I hear it's a pretty good school. My wife and most of her family went there, so I hear nothing but good things about it. What did you study and when did you graduate and did you play any sports there?
Yeah. So I studied business administration. When I was in school at Deland High School, I dual enrolled. So I basically got my associate's degree over at Daytona State in high school. And then I just had 2 years over at Stetson. I hung up the cleats whenever I went to college because they gave me a scholarship for my academics and not sports. So I hung up the cleats and started music. And, you know, it was tough to stop playing ball, but it was the right season of life.
Yeah, but it's hard to argue with a nice scholarship like that. And, yeah. And you took all the right business classes, right? Yeah. Well, all I can say is right on because, you know, as a business and marketing prof myself, I have to be a little bit biased in all this. So I'm really happy to be having this conversation with you here. And yet during this time, you managed to actively build your audience with music and then TikTok. How were you able to balance all of these things?
Yeah, it was tough. College was really tough. I think during college, I was probably able to give like 80% to my music and to social media, just because, you know, school's a little bit tough, and I was doing music in Atlanta while I was going to school here in Florida, right? So I'd finish my last class on Thursday, and drive 6 hours up to Atlanta, stay there for the weekend, and come back on Monday for my class. And yeah, so that was tough. But as soon as it finished, I spent the last month of my semester, of my senior semester, kind of just studying. So whenever I graduated, I could hit the ground running and go attack this social media thing.
And did you record this all in a studio then in Atlanta?
Yeah. Yeah, I was working at a studio up there.
Wow. And really good friends. Where did you shoot your videos?
Yeah, I was traveling all over the place for the videos. Sometimes here in Florida, sometimes Atlanta, sometimes in California. So a little bit all over the place.
I have a hunch most people who've never done that, and that includes me, have no idea what the effort is to make a music video, because you've got to know your song well enough to be able to kind of lip sync it, right? How hard is this?
I would say that's pretty simple, because after you've finished the making of a song, you've probably listened to it 1,000 times, over and over, whether it's writing or producing or all the extra stuff, the mixing and mastering. So you've probably heard it so many times. The music video is the fun part.
Ah, well, that's good. I know, because just being, in a classroom lecturing position for so many years, I know all the words, but I say them differently every time. Yeah. And I can imagine you just having difficulty following the cadence and getting it just right to match the recording. I know I could never do it. I would trip all over myself. But anyway, what have been your inspirations to write your songs? I mean, I listened to a bunch of your videos. I didn't listen. I watched, actually, on YouTube. I noticed you have more than 43,000 subscribers there alone. And that's, that's quite enough to put you into a nice rev share with Google in and of itself. What inspired you to write all your songs?
Yeah, so music was basically my escape, and still is my escape, kind of where I could detach my brain from the real world, and get away. I felt like in middle school is kind of when I started writing music for the first time. It's kind of, I felt like nobody really cared to what I have to say. They didn't really care too much. So my idea was, I'll make music and, get all this stuff out that I want to get out, and eventually somebody will listen to me. So I love it.
Do you have any musical training, or is this just another thing that you're really good at?
Yeah, not much musical training. I grew up in the church, and my whole family's pretty musical. But no traditional music training.
Wow, that's amazing to be able to do that. But now let's talk about your evolution from music into TikTok, because it's been a while since you posted a music video, and now everything it's all about TikTok. So tell us about that.
Yeah, the bag is on TikTok. That is the bag. I mean, music is kind of tough for 99% of artists, and then it's only a little bit tough for the big guys. But it's still tough. Music doesn't really pay very well unless you're in the right spot at the right time. And I've learned that it's a lot easier to get into the right spot at the right time on TikTok. So there's a bag over there for sure.
Yeah. You're never going to get rich off Spotify unless you're Taylor Swift, right?
Yeah, basically.
You got to get billions of plays.
And then even then you have to make a lot of other people rich first before you get rich.
Of course. So TikTok announced its live studio back in December of 21. What kind of content did you post prior to this, or have you only just done TikTok lives?
Yeah, I started streaming on Instagram for those first 2 years in college. I started during COVID. 2020 to 2022. I was streaming over there because everybody was at home watching their phones all day long because there was nothing else to do. So the growth potential was unmatched. So I hopped on there and tried to take advantage of it. And then I switched over to TikTok in 22.
Very good. I mean, you've done incredibly well since then. Live streaming has so many advantages over static content, because creators like you can engage with an audience. With static content, you just post something and run, right? And you get comments and maybe you respond to them. But with doing a live stream, now you've got the back and forth that can go on in real time. And that's so different here. How big is your audience on any given day?
Yeah, I mean, we try to, the goal is to try and keep between 1,000 to 2,000 concurrent viewers on a live stream. Because that's what I'm spending most of my time doing is live streaming on TikTok. You know, and then I believe the analytics come out to about 2.5 million views per month. So we try to stay around that range.
That's wow. And how many, you say you got 1,000 to 2,000 concurrent. So at any given time, right?
Yeah, that's the goal.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so like over the span of a day, how many uniques would you have?
Probably about 60,000, I think. Wow. I don't know if you can run the math on that and figure out if that's correct.
That's a lot. That's a pretty good sized town there.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot more difficult to, you know, get views on a live stream as opposed to short form content. But the goal on a live stream is to keep the attention. So, yeah. I mean, if you can get 2.5 million views a month, but these people are watching you for an average view duration of 7 minutes at a time, it's nuts. The opportunity is unbelievable.
And so let's suppose I miss your live stream. Can I come access it later? Or is it just gone?
No, but you can catch the next live stream because I'll probably already be live by the time you want to look for it.
So it's truly ephemeral. It's like here right now or forget it.
Yeah. And that's what makes it exciting.
Wow. Okay. So that makes an imperative then for your fans to drop whatever it is they're doing and tune in.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool. What do you talk about though? I mean, come on, man. You're on the air all the time. And I just used radio speak there. Yeah. You're on the air. What do you talk about? I mean, the weather, politics, you know, the price of gasoline. What gives?
Sometimes we talk about the price of gasoline. I mean, you'd be surprised how many people are excited about the price of gasoline. I'm just kidding, Nick.
Yeah, that's good. Good.
Yeah. I mean, whatever is going on, we're trying to make it exciting as possible. Normally, it's a bunch of brain dead stuff to help the people who are watching escape their real lives. Because I understand this is an escape for me, but my goal is to help these people escape their crazy lives, and whatever it takes to make that happen is what we're doing.
And do you have to spend a lot of time prepping for all these daily conversations that you have with your followers, or are you just kind of winging it?
Yeah, sometimes I'll hop on the phone with other creators and we'll talk about, you know, how can we make the streams better? What can we do? We'll plan events, we'll plan skits or things like this. But as far as like the actual operation, I'm just setting up my phone and pressing the go live button. I think my biggest production is I got to turn on my ring lights.
That's great. I tell you what, I wish that recording a podcast episode were that easy. Because I spent like all day Sunday this week diving into Trey from Next Door, finding everything I could about you just to be able to have a conversation. And you just get up and go do it. Wow, that's amazing. And what times a day do you do this?
The times are always fluctuating because it's really tough to get. Because right now I stream with other creators and our goal is to make the best stream possible for the people watching at home, whether they're watching on my side or watching on the other creator's side. We want everybody to be entertained, right? That being said, it's really hard to get a whole bunch of social media creators to be on time. So
I bet.
Our times are all over the place. But right now we shoot for 2 p.m. Eastern to about 4 or 5 p.m. Eastern. And then we get off and get back on around 8 or 9 p.m. Eastern, and we run that one. That's the big stream that we run until about 3 or 4 a.m.
How do you do that?
I don't know.
When I was in college, I guess that would have been easy like 40 years ago, but I just can't imagine. And you're doing this 7 days a week, right?
Yeah, I missed one day in 2024.
Holy cow.
We were in Vegas
amazing.
Gambling, so I had to take off.
So basically, you've been building your foundation, right, the whole time. Which I think is that's admirable. It's so important to build that foundation because if you don't feed it, those followers are going to tune into something else, right?
Yeah, there's so much social media nowadays. Like there's so much content being made. It is imperative that you stay in front of your fans' eyes, or else they will forget about you. I mean, it could be your number one fan. I mean, 1 week without you, they will forget about you. And that's just how the social media is set up right now. It is, it really truly is quantity over quality.
Wow. So, okay. So why didn't you live stream from Vegas?
That roulette table had me.
So your fans could just wait for an extra day.
I told them, wait for one day.
Wait for a day. Okay. That's funny. So if you had to describe your typical viewer, what would be their demos? You know, are they young, old, male, female, whatever?
Yeah, I think right now it's 65-35 skewed towards the female audience. But as far as age, I mean, it's all over the place. We have kids. We have parents, we have uncles, we have families. I have a mom and a daughter who watch together on separate accounts at the same time. And it's one of the coolest dynamics I've ever seen. Mm. It really feels like a neighborhood, you know, of all different types of people.
That is interesting. The word neighborhood, you've described a community there, yeah, basically. And that's what you've got. You've got a community of followers. They have one big thing in common, and that's you. Yeah, that's powerful, and it's got to be humbling at the same time.
I'm so blessed, yeah, so grateful.
Yeah, I agree with you. To what do you credit your large following? I mean, what are you doing that makes this thing sticky, that makes them cling to it and keep coming back?
You know, Nick, I really don't know why me. You know, I ask this all the time, and I even tell my stream, I'll be on stream, I'll say, thank y'all for choosing me, because there's so many people. There's literally so many people who are making content. Why the heck are you guys watching me? I'm such a normal dude. And, you know, I'd say number one, the reason why this is happening and working is the favor of God. You know, that's everything. And, you know, he's given favor to those who have it. And for some reason, he chose me. And I'd say number two is just trying my very best to stay authentic to the people at home, because that's what they want. They don't want to see a superstar. They can look everywhere else and find a superstar. They can look on TV. They can look at the magazines, the billboards, and find a super. They want to feel somebody is like them. Somebody understands them. They want to feel involved.
Well, so, your name alone, Trey from Next Door, that screams authenticity. It's not like Trey from the top of a mountain or whatever, you know, you are just Trey from Next Door. And that speaks volumes. I really like that. When we come back, we'll dive into how Trey does what he does, how he built and maintains his brand, and most importantly, how he monetizes all this. Because after all, what's the point if you don't have something to show for it?
Life sometimes has a way of interfering with our university education. Marriage, family, work, any or all of these can cause us to hit the pause button on our degree, with hopes of one day finishing it. The only problem is that returning to campus can get a lot harder when you're no longer 20 years old. And that's precisely why we launched our online BBA, with majors in accounting, finance, general business, marketing, management, human resource management, and computer information systems. Available completely online. You can return to school without having to step foot on campus, or maybe you want to transfer in from a two-year program elsewhere, but once again, are not able to attend face-to-face. Our online offerings are for you as well. We can help you finish your degree and climb higher on your career ladder, at your pace and in your time. We're AACSB accredited and among the most elite of business schools around the world. Reach for the stars and do it with a WTBBA in hand. For more info, find us at WTNU.edu/COB or call 806-651-2525.
One of the most important aspects of marketing is branding the name, the logo, the product or service offering that are distinct from all others. It must be maintained and protected. Brands, though, can also apply to individuals or groups of people. Much like Jimmy Buffett's brand, which was far more than just his hit songs, but also his merchandise, books, restaurants, and resorts. Trey, you are your own brand, but what is that brand? What makes you distinctive? quintessentially Trey from Next Door that keeps people coming back for more.
And Nick, I feel like it's changed over time. I feel like whenever I first started, it was more music, and now I've kind of taken a break from the music and moved into just streaming and being me. If I had to describe who is Trey from Next Door right now, I would say he's probably just a guy chasing his dreams on live, trying to build a connection with the people watching him.
So how did this evolve as you've worked through the TikTok lives the last few years? I mean, you started from something, you've got an OG, right? You've got an original point there, but what caused you to change and how did this happen?
Yeah, I think whenever I first started, it was all really performative. Even my personality felt performative. I was scared of being myself and showing a side of me that maybe isn't as pretty than just smiling and singing. And I'm so happy. Everybody's so happy. That works for a little while. But whenever you're streaming for 6 to 10 hours a day, every single day, people want to feel authenticity. They don't want to just see somebody smiling and faking it all day long, every single day. And for me, I was legitimately going crazy, smiling every single day and not able to show any real emotions. And, once I shifted into just being a normal guy, there was a little bit of backlash. There's a lot of people, oh, you've changed. I can't believe that you're not who I thought you were. And it's been very fulfilling finding appreciation within myself and appreciation within my community for the person that I truly am. And it feels like a weight off my back. So it's taken a few years to be comfortable becoming that person.
That's great. I mean, I can only imagine how tough it is. Number one, just, going live 7 days a week for 6 to 10 hours and trying to figure out things to talk about, but also being able to put that smile on your face and still be authentic, not making a fake smile, but a real one that people can identify with. I mean, do you ever struggle with that, or does this just come naturally?
I think of myself to be a charismatic person, but there's definitely days where I think we all have them where it's like, I'm just going to clock into work. I'm just going to do my work and I'm going to get out of here. But unfortunately, whenever you're in front of the camera, they get to see all of your facial expressions.
So they do.
I'm not able to make fat, nasty faces at my coworkers or else everybody's going to see it. So some days it's tough, but most days it's not.
See, that's the difference between a passion and a job.
Yeah.
And that's tough. I mean, there are days when I walk into the classroom, it's like, I really don't feel like being here. Yeah. I may love my subject and all that, but I'm just not having a good day. And I'm sure you have some of those too, but you got to overcome it, right?
Yeah.
And you've got to be on your game all the time. No small task. Where do you see your brand going in the future from here? I mean, do you see it as maybe staying the same, or do you plan to grow and change with it?
Yeah, I think my brand will change as I grow, because now within the past year or so, my goal has really just been to be authentic, be me, be the person that I am off of live, on live. And I think that in itself will cause me and my content to grow with me. As time goes on, my content will also go on.
That's great. It's so important for a brand to just change with the times. No brand should stay the same. Even a big brand like a Coca-Cola or something, it has changed since 1886 when it was introduced. It's not the same brand it once was. And all the other successful brands around us are ones that they have stories to tell of when they were different and how they just kind of rolled with the changes. That's so important to be able to do that. Have you been able to attract any corporate sponsorships?
Yeah, we've done the corporate thing before. It's a little bit tougher because big established brands and companies aren't yet on the wave of live streaming. They want to see traditional statistics, views, retention time. And I don't think they quite yet understand the power of live streaming. You know, for instance, a good key metric for, say, a short form video would be, okay, say your video gets 1 million views and your average watch time is, you know, between 10 and 20 seconds, as opposed to the normal 7 seconds. That's 10 and 20 seconds. You can keep somebody's engagement for that long. It's amazing. Well, on my live stream, you know, my average view duration is 7 minutes, and having somebody's captivating attention, you know, keeping them actively listening for 7 minutes, you can do so much with those 7 minutes, which is huge for me, but I don't think that the big brands are willing to take the risk on jumping into a boat like that yet. So, but you know, we found a lot of success without the big brands, and that too has been freeing, being able to kind of do it on our own and not really need the help of a big corporation as we normally would.
And I understand that, because I think the big corporate brands, they want to go with things that they can look at, count, and all that.
They know it works.
Yeah. And they're always trying to be cautious and everything.
Of course.
But at the same time, I look at you and think, you know, you're live streaming. That's not a whole lot different from some of the talk radio hosts I talked to back in the 1970s, or listened to in the 70s and 80s. Yeah. They're live streaming. It's just that it was over the airwaves as opposed to on TikTok, because we didn't have it back then. They didn't have up to the minute stats. And they also did not have the analytics of knowing that their average viewer stayed tuned in for 7 minutes. They had no idea. Collecting data back then required market research companies to send out booklets to random people and to who had to fill out when they were listening or watching things.
And that's crazy.
Yeah, that is absolutely crazy. That was the stone age of market research. Uh-huh. You've got up to the minute stats because everybody's logged into something. And so TikTok knows exactly how long they've been tuned into something. So you've got the ability to get real time stats. They've got, you know, they might be pretend stats, or they're just weak stats at best, really. And so I think you're in a far better position today. Perhaps the most important part, though, of all of this is, how do you monetize your brand? I mean, how do you make an income off all you do? I mean, I'm certain our listeners would love to be in your shoes.
Yeah. So it's actually a crazy model that on paper really shouldn't work as well as it does. But TikTok doesn't pay me, not a singular dime. All of my money comes directly from my supporters. They send money via gifts while I'm live streaming, or subs. They send either gifts or subs, and TikTok takes a split of that, and then I'm taking home the rest. So my whole life has changed solely off of people choosing me to be a person that they want to support on a live stream. And I'm so grateful.
That's crazy. Cause I know, growing up in Chicago, I never would have thought of sending money to Steve Dahl or when I was at school in Indiana, listening to Bob and Tom, there's no way I was going to send them money. I don't know how they got paid. It didn't matter to me, but your fans are paying you. That's a crazy revenue model there that we didn't have a few decades ago. It just did not exist, and nobody could have conceived of anything at all like that. So I need you to explain this a little, and I'm actually going to pre-explain some of it, because I'm going to ask you, you know, what are TikTok diamonds? I did a little homework here, guys. I read that it takes 1,000 diamonds to equal $5 in revenue to you, but that also means $5 in revenue to TikTok, because they got to make money doing this too, right? So 1,000 diamonds is really 10 bucks, and you cut it in half. Okay, that's great. It gets a little confusing here, because basically viewers are buying virtual coins, which are used as gifts, and they become diamonds when you receive it. So it's just a bunch of jargon here, and then you cash out, obviously. So I know I kind of explained a bunch of it here, but maybe not so much. Can you go a little more granular and tell us how all this works?
Yeah. So TikTok gives people at home the opportunity to send gifts and support their favorite creator with gifts. The GIFs are basically these animations that TikTok has worked really hard on perfecting, and they're really cool, and they tickle a certain part of your brain that makes you want to send more. And the more money that you spend on the gift, the cooler that it looks. And yeah, like you said, TikTok takes half of every diamond that the creator makes, right? So the people at home, they spend their money. It turns into coins. They use those coins to buy a gift. As a creator, you receive the gift, and then it turns into diamonds. I don't know all the mess. All I know is people send a gift. It makes me money.
That's all that's important, right?
Yeah. My goal is to figure out how do I get these people excited about sending gifts?
Well, okay, I'm not worried about how much you make personally, but let's just say one of our listeners is thinking about, you know, maybe I should start a TikTok live stream. You know, maybe like a 60-something marketing professor here who wants to drone on and on and on about new product success stories or something like that. Let's suppose, you know, that person did that and they were successful. How much could like a person make in a year on doing TikTok lives?
I think that if you have a decent personality and you're willing to put in 2 hours a day, every single day, there's no reason why you shouldn't be going home with six figures in a year.
And what you're doing, you can do that from anywhere as long as you've got good internet, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it doesn't have to be hotel Wi-Fi. It could be just your cellular even. Yeah. As long as you got a good signal, you can do that. And nobody cares what the room looks like behind you, right? If they see the unmade bed with the pillows or whatever.
Sometimes that's better than a made bed, to be honest. Yeah, it's all psychology.
And I have to ask you, I mean, I already know the answer, but tell us what room of the house you do your live streams from.
Oh yeah, I stream my bedroom.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
You know, I rip apart my students who do their class videos from their bedroom. I tell them, I don't want to see your unmade bed. I don't want to see your cat. And I don't want to see your dirty dishes in the kitchen either. But you get away with it.
Yeah. Well, I do have to, unfortunately, make my bed every day. So I can't get away with
it. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good. So, okay. What motivates your fans to toss coins in your general direction? I mean, is this a donation of sorts? And what do they get for this? I mean, just the thrill of giving, or do you give them a shout out? And I guess the other really important thing is this is kind of taxable income, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure they send you a form 1099 every January, right?
Yeah. Okay. So first we're going to start with, I hate taxes. I don't know how much time I want to spend on that.
We all do. Yeah. That's good. Okay. End of story.
Yeah. We have to pay those, unfortunately. This gets really intricate. It's easy once you understand it, but it's hard to grasp at first. So the concept, in a broad sense, is two creators have people at home who support them. They both get on screen together and they run a 5-minute battle. A battle is something TikTok has set up where they've gamified gift sending. So 5 minutes, both creators, supporters at home are fighting against each other to see who can send the most gifts in 5 minutes. And on paper, it sounds ridiculous. It sounds absolutely ridiculous. But this is how I explain it to people who have never seen it. Imagine a football team. People at home, they're buying the merch. Some people... they've built their whole life around the football team that they support. They buy tickets to go to the shows and go watch the games. Imagine if your favorite football team was in a championship, there's 10 minutes left and they're down by one touchdown, and all you have to do, Nick, is send $100 for your team to score and win the championship. You'd probably be sending that $100.
Yeah, of course.
I'd be sending $200 just to be safe. My team would be winning this game and I'd be taking that win back home. This is essentially that. It seems absolutely crazy on paper, but once you get into it, it gets really competitive. I mean, and teams, the teams is what I refer to them as, my team, the people that watch me, they're my team. You know, we rep that we're one of the best teams in the country. And whoever wants to go against us will be sent home with a loss. And it gets really cutthroat, and we love it.
So basically your fans are trying to push you over the goal line.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. I need some fans like that. I need some students like that.
It gets really intense, man. I mean, there's not much in life that I've ever felt that gives me the excitement of a TikTok battle. And it sounds crazy. Like I hear myself saying it, and you know, I've played football. I've traveled the country. I've been to some of the coolest music recording studios in the world. I've gotten to meet some of my idols, some of my favorite celebrities. And there's just not much that compares to winning a TikTok live battle.
Oh, I'll bet. What, yeah. Man. Man. Oh man. I can only imagine here. Well, I've also heard it said many times from traveling bands that there's gold to be found in the merch, that ticket prices, and along with all the fees and stuff that you got to pay Ticketmaster, they're not enough to make a tour profitable. And I know you sell merch, and I've been on your site now, and I've seen all the kinds of things you sell and so forth. How have you merchandised your brand, and is this a significant revenue stream for you?
Yeah, merch is actually what got me. It gave me the ability to hire my first employee. So my buddy Gabe, who used to watch the streams about 2 years ago, started watching my streams all the way from Vegas. You know, I live in Florida. He was watching all the way from Vegas. I ended up giving him access to be a moderator on my stream, which is where he like kind of controls the chat and takes care of things for me while I'm on stream that I can't really do in the moment. I ended up moving him into my house to run the merch. So he does all the production and fulfillment, and we work with a buddy that I went to school with to do all of the manufacturing. So he works hand in hand with him, and it's a pleasure to be able to provide business to people that I care about. So yeah, the merch is doing well.
That's great. I noticed on your site that, well, everything was sold out for starters. So yeah, you obviously are using the scarcity model, which I absolutely love. I've seen it done by other people. You never flood the market with cool things. Just, you know, you got to make just enough to make people envious and cause them to get out their wallets fast. Otherwise, yeah, there's, you know, they're just going to be out of luck here. I mean, do you have inventory in the garage, or is this print on demand, or what?
Most of it's print on demand.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Yeah, I hear you.
We'll say, hey, we've got this. It's only available this long. Get it while it lasts.
Yeah. But if somebody needs a 6XL, you don't have it sitting out there.
No.
Yeah.
You can make it happen, though.
Yeah, that's all that matters, right? Yeah. And you can flip it pretty fast.
Yeah.
See, that's good. Having somebody right here in the land and a buddy, that's the best part. Yeah, you can just, bam, call them and off you go. Get that thing printed and in the mail and make the money. That's great. And I also saw that you offer an autograph.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people wanted their stuff signed, which is so weird. I mean, circling back to sixth grade when nobody cared what I had to say, to now people not only buying a product that I've produced, but asking me to sign it. It's just so full circle, and it's so cool, and it would have never imagined that it would be like this. But yeah, I mean, on the website, if you want it signed, there's an option for it signed. And yeah,
that's great.
I can't believe it.
I noticed that none of the merchandise had your name on it. It would only have your name if you autographed it. And why is that?
Yeah, so that's my own doing. A lot of people would disagree with me for that. Trey, why don't you put your name on your merch? It should say Trey from Next Door. And I personally think that's corny. And I wouldn't be buying somebody's merch that has their name on it. I want a cool design. And that's how I wanted to make my merch. And I find that it performs better. The sales are much better. You know, people don't want to walk around with my face on their shirt. I'm sure there's some, but the general population probably doesn't want to wear a random person's face on their shirt. So my goal is just to make some fun, cool designs that resonate with people. And that's what we've done.
Well, that's good. And you've mentioned the time slots that you do each day. How did you pick these times? And have you studied your TikTok fan habits and when they're online the most? I mean, did you choose your time slots to match their online activities, or is this just when it's convenient for you and the other people you're battling?
Yeah, for sure. We've spent a lot of time studying when people are on live or when people are watching social media, when they're on their phones. One thing that I've found, I've been doing social media for about 6 years. One thing that I've found is a general rule of thumb is about 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern is the best time for here in the States, because that's when the whole country's kind of getting off of work, having dinner, scrolling on their phone, hanging out. There's not really much to do in that time, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, because then you know, think about all the other time zones as well. So yeah, that's normally when our most productive time on stream is, most viewers and most interaction. And we're always studying, always trying new things. And that's what we found.
Are your nightly viewers pretty much the same people every night, or is it a mixed bag?
We have a lot of returning people. I'd say most of our people are coming back to watch the next stream.
It's always good to have repeat offenders, isn't it?
Yeah, we love it.
And what are you doing to grow your audience? Because no business can survive in the long run without growing. I mean, come on. Well, if you had shareholders, they would never, ever want to hear you at the annual meeting say, hey, we held sales constant. That's bad news. You know, everybody wants to see growth. And so what are you doing to grow it?
Yeah, I think my goal is just staying consistent with what works until it doesn't, and then pivot into something new. I think based off what you just said, I would probably be a shareholder's nightmare, because my idea is just to keep doing what I'm doing. You know, and if it's time to grow, then it's time to grow. But I feel like with my personality, if I allowed myself, I could work myself to death. And if I was so focused on growth, I think it'd get pretty ugly. I mean, we're already doing 6 to 10 hours a day. I don't know how much more I can do and still function as a human being. So my goal right now, I'm in a wonderful situation. I have a lot of stuff like visioned for the future if I stay at this exact rate. So the goal is stay at this exact rate, and if it grows, it grows. And if it slows down, it slows down. That's how social media goes.
Well, all I can say is I wish I had half your energy. you've impressed the daylights out of me. You keep going and going and going and going, and I just want to take a nap. Anyway, after the break, we'll take a look at Trey's future, where he sees himself in 10 years, and we're going to look at some potentially choppy waters ahead.
The MBA is the most popular graduate degree in the United States, and with good reason. It leads to better jobs, promotions, and salary increases. At the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University, our MBA program is entirely online for when you're ready to make that move. With as few as 31 credit hours and specializations offered in 5 areas, you can fast-track your career in as little as 18 months. Whether you're looking for a promotion or initial job placement, you'll stand head and shoulders above the competition. And because we've been teaching online since 1997, we're not the new kids on the block. Trust your education and career to dedicated faculty who are not only experts in their fields, but also old pros in the online arena. Our consistently high rankings say it all. A GMAT waiver is available. We're AACSB accredited and among the most elite of business schools around the world. Reach for the stars and do it with a WT MBA in hand. For more information, find us at wtamu.edu/COB or call 806-651-2500. From the Texas Panhandle to the world, we're here to help you reach those stars.
Every business venture, whether it sells products, services, or experiences, or is built on a personality, has to think long term. The future is never guaranteed because markets and customers change, technologies change, and well, if there's anything certain, it's that we live in a world of uncertainty. Trey, you've built a huge following in such a short time, and it's got to be a great feeling. I know I would be ecstatic to have 432,000 Instagram followers. I mean, I'm a mere fraction of that. But it's built on a platform that only grew into prominence in just the last 5 to 7 years or so. And before that, none of this would have been possible. And to be perfectly honest, something shiny and new could come along in a few years and become the next big thing. I'll just cut to the chase. Where do you see yourself in 10 years when you are 33, which sounds so young?
Well, I hope by 33 to have a family and kids. I don't know what social media looks like for me or for the rest of us in 10 years from now. I think one of the reasons why I am where I am is because I'm good at rolling with the punches, and whatever happens, I know how to adjust and make it work for me. So I don't know exactly what happens. I know something will happen and I know I'm going to have to change. I'm not sure exactly what that looks like, but I really hope in 10 years to be having a family, and maybe I'm doing the Family Channel thing. I mean, that's always a lot of fun. I think that'd be pretty cool, but I don't know if I want to subject my wife and kids to the internet, because I know how ugly it can get as well.
What about music? I mean, this is how you started out. Any chances of returning to your roots?
Yeah, I think music is more for me. It's more like a privilege than it is productive. I think I'll do music whenever I feel comfortable in the foundation that I've built from everything else. We could go and attack music and hundreds of thousands of monthly listeners or millions of followers. But, you know, with that stuff, there's not a lot of monetary gain. It doesn't really pay very well. I think right now for me, it's important to try and build a solid foundation monetarily so that I can move once I'm ready or once the ability to build is no longer there, which may happen here in about 8 days whenever this TikTok ban happens.
Yeah, huh? No kidding. And we'll talk about that in a minute here. But do you see any emerging trends that might dictate how content creators will go about doing their jobs in the coming years? I mean, I've seen a lot of changes in the last 10 to 15 years or so ago. I call it short attention span theater. And I see it in my students. They don't want to have to consume anything that's more than about a minute and a half, and yet they'll watch TikTok all night long with you, which seems like such a great contradiction. And I know, oh my gosh, it's like pulling teeth to get my students to watch my weekly class videos, because it's 20 minutes and I know I'm dull and boring and all that, and they just won't have it. And I have to resort to tricks like, you know, embedding really important class information at about minute 16. You know, make sure you're still listening here. You might miss something important here.
Yeah.
So given that we have gone toward such short form forms of entertainment, and yet at the same time are willing to watch hour upon hour of live stream, I'm just curious if you see anything else kind of popping out of the ground here, like a daffodil in the springtime.
Yeah, I think social media is so new, and we're learning so much about our brains and how we react to the consumption of content. Because I agree with you. I mean, our attention span is just so small, but that's because we're filled with dopamine upon dopamine on TikTok and Instagram Reels or Facebook, and our bodies love it. It eats it up. But I also have a lot of conversations with people my age and people who are not my age, and they love podcasts. It's just got to be in the right setting. And I feel like you asked if there's any new trends. I think us as humans, we may be getting over right now. I don't know. This is just my theory of how we are as consumers right now. I think we may be getting over the whole quick, brainless, mindless, brain dead content, quick, make me dopamine. You know, it's all this crap that we're just filling our brains with. And I think we're looking for something a little bit more authentic, but in the ways that we want to receive it, not the ways that big media wants us to receive it, right? So traditional TV, I think, is out the window. But I think live streaming will be more prominent because it feels more authentic to see your favorite person in real time reacting to exactly what you have to say. And you get to feel like you have a say in it. It's like the Kardashians, but in 3D.
I agree with you, because I watch all these reels all the time for, you know, like a guy in a golden, you know, I'm promoting a guy here who owns a golden retriever, and van life people, you know, which intrigues me for some reason. I'll never do that, but I just find it really mystifying. But I see them putting together these highly entertaining little reels that are, you know, maybe 90 seconds long, and they show themselves having great fun. They're smiling, they're waving, blah, 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 you know, all this. And every one of them kind of sounds the same. Part of me wants to maybe interact with some of these people, because all they've got with those little 1.5 minute reels is they got comments, and they never interact with those. They never answer them. I see they just sit there. They got people commenting, but they're not reading. They're not responding. I would much rather watch a half hour video with someone live streaming, telling me what is van life really like in your Ford Transit or whatever. How much did you spend? What's it like sleeping in the back of a van sideways and, you know, hitting your feet up against the sidewall and getting cold and trying to cook on a little counter that's 2 feet long and all that. I would much rather do that than watch all this happy talk for 90 seconds, which is basically all it is. Mm-hmm. So at the timing of this episode, which is the 11th of January, we're looking at a possible U.S. ban of TikTok on the 19th. That's a week from tomorrow. And for those of you who aren't keeping score, that's the day before the inauguration. I have to suspect that there may have been a little shrewd thinking in here to put that ban in there the day before the next inauguration. And this came down last April. So, you know, this was a long time ago, 9 months ago. But basically what it boils down to is, unless a non-Chinese buyer comes along, 170 million Americans will either have to learn how to use a VPN or simply go without the platform entirely. Are you ready for this possibility? I mean, Dre from next door could be dead in the water here. I mean, this is not just a game changer. It could be a game ender for you. Where do you go from here? Do you have a plan B? I mean, is Instagram a fallback, or is sleeping in sounding pretty good?
I'll tell you, man, sleeping in sounds so good. taking a few days off sounds good. So we've got some really cool things planned. If it decides to stay around, I have no idea. I have no insider information. I've talked to my people that work at TikTok. They don't know either. I think this is classified information. Only for the really high ups, and even the people working at TikTok in the US sector don't know if they'll have a job. So yeah, if it doesn't stick around, it'd be amazing. It would, I would love to have a break, but you know, I'm really not worried either way, because I've learned so much in the past 2 years, that I can go apply in any aspect of social media. And I believe if this does happen, I don't think Instagram is ready yet for the influx of users that have been so used to a platform's efficiency, such as TikTok's. Instagram is still just so buggy, and all of their ins and outs, just, it's not all tied together. It doesn't feel like one circle of an app. It's all over the place. As of right now, I mean, unless they're ready to make a big update, I think something else is going to come shooting up and taking the place of TikTok. I mean, there's a lot of advantage, a lot of opportunity for a new company to make a lot of money. So I hope somebody does. And I'll follow the trend, and I'll find what works all over again. I've done it before.
That's,
I'll
do great. It again. It's just sad though that your followers are not as portable as we might like them to be. You can't just say, "Hey, y'all, follow me over here."
Yeah.
It doesn't work quite that way, does it? I mean, they're on TikTok, you're on TikTok, and you go somewhere else and they decide, I don't know.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of that. But I mean, if TikTok really, truly isn't available, we're in a spot where social media is part of every single human being's lives here in this country. Every person, even the people who hate it, love social media.
Yeah.
I think it won't be too hard to find your favorite creator on the next platform.
there are plenty of other external threats that could happen as well, like newcomers to the game who steal viewers. I mean, what's to stop somebody like, you know, an old marketing prof like me or some young man who's 23, stop laughing over there, from coming along and stealing, you know, your viewers here? It could happen. I mean, there's only 24 hours in a day, and we can't spend every hour of our waking day watching TikTok lives or other platforms for that matter. I mean, we all get our weekly screen time updates. I know I do on my iPhone, and I'm usually depressed. It's like, ooh, I spent that much time. But I just can't spend any more because I have things to do. I got to eat, work, sleep, work out, whatever. What are you doing to insulate yourself against all those other threats?
The fact that in the realm of what I'm doing, all of us are paid based on what the people send us. It gets really competitive, and we get really protective of the people who are sending us gifts. You know, this person's part of my team. No, this person's part of my team. No, they belong to my team. No, because, you know, if somebody that supports you is going to go and they stop watching, they go support somebody else, that affects your income. So it can get really sticky. Unfortunately, there's not an ethics book that TikTok gives us of ethics in the workplace. We all kind of figure it out on our own, which can make some relationships very sticky, and some people are not as nice as others, and they're as manipulative as can be, and some people are not. Some people are, they somehow keep this, they're still good humans despite all of the things that are thrown at us as being content creator in this space. But I'll say for me, there's definitely, when I'm not on live, a lot of FOMO that is so hard to get over. And after 2.5 years, I still have not gotten over it, where even if I stream for 10 hours, as soon as I get off, I'm watching other people's lives, seeing if my people are in there sending gifts. And if I was on, I would have got a gift. It's like constant FOMO, which is tough.
I can only imagine, because, you know, you want those people to be giving you money gifts, not somebody else.
Exactly.
Jeez. And how do you keep coming up with all this content? I can't imagine being on screen, live streaming 6 to 10 hours a day and having something to talk about. I would run out of things to talk about. I know there are folks who would doubt that in a moment, you know, that he could certainly keep going. But no, I know I could never come up with stuff to talk about for 6 to 10 days or 6 to 10 hours, because you don't want dead air, right?
Yeah.
You've got to keep it going. How do you manage this? And do you think the well of ideas will ever run dry?
Yeah, this dead air is a great term, because there's none of that. If you have that, people will immediately scroll.
Yeah.
And you do not want people to scroll. You don't want to give them half a second of even having the idea of scrolling, because they will scroll. But I will tell you, it's not as hard as most may think it is. We are creatures of habit, and we want to know what to expect in our daily lives. If you can have something every single day, the same thing, it works. So what I've done is I've spent the last 2 years trying to figure out what works. And every day I do it over again with a little bit of deviation. So the people at home, they know what to expect. They know what they're going to get. And I know what to expect and what I'm going to get. And it's a lot of fun.
And what about your current audience? I suspect that it's primarily younger than older. I mean, I know TikTok skews young, but you know, eventually they're going to get older too, just like you will. I mean, they're going to start careers. They're going to get married, have kids, buy houses, have mortgages, and basically trying to live the so-called dream. Do you envision trying to keep serving them in different ways, or are you going to keep shooting for demos younger than you? Because you're going to be 28 in 5 years or 33 in 10. Are you going to keep going for the 33-year-olds, or are you going to go for the 23-year-olds?
I think as long as I'm making social media content, my goal will just to be me. And if I'm being me, I think that means that my content is going to have to grow with me, because I'm going to be growing, I hope. I hope I'm also growing as a human being as I am with age. So I think my content also grows with me. And I think that maybe the people who are watching me now will still enjoy watching me then for the same reasons.
Well, that's good because, you know, if you get married and you have kids, I mean, you're going to be telling stories about the midnight feed zone, you know, you've got a crying baby at a very inopportune moment who has to be attended to at that time.
Yeah.
And that subject may not resonate with someone who is 20 years old, but if a listener is in their early 30s, they're going to relate to that right away. 5 years ago, Trey, did you have any inkling things would turn out like they have? I mean, things have really gone well for you. I mean, is this all part of your plan, or is there some maybe divine intervention here? Luck? What do you call it?
I think 5 years ago, if you would have sat me down and told me what I was 18, 5 years ago. Oh my gosh. I was just starting college. If you would have sat me down and told me I would be on TikTok Live building a team to beat other teams, I would call you absolutely crazy. You know, when I was 18, I refused to start a TikTok channel, even though all of my music people were telling me I needed to, because I thought TikTok was weird. I said, everybody on there is a bunch of weirdos. I am never going to make a TikTok account. And then I did in the first week. I had 100,000 followers.
Holy cow.
I would have called you crazy, but if you told me you'd be doing something and you'd be successful at it, I would have agreed, because I've known as far back as I can remember, as long as I apply myself, I will be successful. And that's what I've done here. And for some wacky reason, I'm on TikTok Live.
Our guest today has been Trey from Next Door, also known as Trey Omrin. Trey, walk us out the door here. What are the best words of advice you can give our listeners for becoming a content creator, young or old?
Two things. Be yourself and stay consistent.
You've been listening to Buff Speak from the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University. Our executive producer is Justin Lovell, and Allison Hunter is our associate producer. Our co-editors are Maverick Evans and Paul Torres. Lindsay Bjork is our Director of Marketing and Outreach Initiatives, which includes overseeing BuffSpeak. Dr. Jeffrey Babb is Director of Accreditation and is our technical consultant. Finally, Dr. Amjad Abdulat is Dean of the College. You can find us online at wtamu.edu/COB for more information about our programs. Be sure to check out our many academic offerings. Come for the quality, stay for the small classes, affordable tuition, and friendly, approachable professors. And look online at our faculty blog, profspeak.com, for more insights. You can listen to BuffSpeak on your favorite podcast portal, as well as on our website, buffspeak.biz. And if you like what you've been hearing, don't be afraid to share us with your friends, colleagues, and family. Word of mouth has always been the best form of advertising. Until next time, love one another. For the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University, I am Dr. Nick Gerlich. And as always, go Buffs! BuffSpeak.